Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, and happy Lincoln's birthday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, as we get into full swing in South Carolina, we know that's the state where the sharp elbows come out during primary season, and this year is no different. We already knew, even before the votes were counted in New Hampshire, that Jeb Bush was going to go with a scorched earth campaign against Kasich and Rubio. And we also see that Ted Cruz has come out with not only some hard-hitting ads, but some very clever ads. One's just a very serious ad about the woman whose house Trump wanted to take through private eminent domain for the limousine parking lot for his casino in New Jersey. There's also the kids playing with the Donald Trump action figure who pretends to be a Republican, and then they tear down the dollhouse due to eminent domain, kind of along the same lines, but in a much more playful way. And then for the Gen X, maybe Gen Y crowd, there's this ad, which is focused on Hillary and her private server, and then trying to make sure that people don't see what was actually kept on that private server while she was Secretary of State. We can't obviously show you the video, but think back if you've seen the movie Office Space. At one point in the movie, they get so fed up with one piece of office equipment, they take it out into a field and kick it and beat it up with a baseball bat. And if you've seen the movie, you're already probably humming the song in your head. Well, the Cruz campaign doing a takeoff of that. Here's an extended excerpt with a caution. There is one cuss word at the very beginning.
Damn, it feels good to be a Clinton. A shameless politician always plays her cards right. Got a crew for the fight on the airwaves. Lap dogs in the press keep the mouths tight. Cause a Clinton never needs to explain what, why it is, what they done, or with who. A real Clinton knows that they're entitled, and you don't get to know what they do.
What difference does it make?
For Clinton, what's loaded in some fat apple file? A Clinton plays the victim for promotion. A Clinton kills it off with a smile.
So you get the sense of it there. Jim, Ted Cruz, known on the trail for his verbatim impressions of the Princess Bride. Now he's pulling out some Office Space. So they say you got to get with the pop culture these days to draw people in, and his campaign's doing a good job of it.
This may be my favorite political ad of all time, Greg. And it's not just because Office Space ranks up there as one of the classics of Western literature and arguably one of the founding cornerstones of American culture. Yes, it's a very funny movie. The scene is about these three guys who are frustrated at their jobs, and they finally have a chance to destroy the printer that has been telling them PC load letter and these mysterious error messages throughout their working years there. This ad depicts her smashing the server and destroying the evidence and doing some with some, you know, shameless glee. One, Greg, isn't it fun to see a Republican attacking a Democrat instead of Republicans attacking each other? True. Two, this is funny. I asked this question in the corner saying, look, if you haven't seen Office Space and you don't know what scene they're kind of emulating or implying there, is it still funny? And by far the general response, admittedly, this is National Review readers, so they're, you know, right of center, but yes, they still find it very funny. People are forwarding it to each other. Somebody said, this is an ad you watch more than once. How many times have we seen political ads that are the same, you know, grainy black and white, slow motion, you just can't trust Hillary, you know, and it kind of gets tuned out. Anytime there's an ad where you want to call your friends and say, oh my goodness, you got to watch this. This is hilarious. That's a good ad. People are going to do the job for you of spreading that message. And it just kind of fits into the, you know, everything in that, you know, that rap song is kind of saying, look, she's shameless. She's not going to be held accountable. She thinks she's above the law. And it's a good message to have. And I just think that, you know, at a time when passions are heating up in this primary, as we'll allude to in the bad martini here, it's good for Ted Cruz to build goodwill by putting together good, funny ads that kind of remind people who they're, you know, Republicans, who their top priority is in this cycle. And, you know, making, I think, a very good point, and making a point that, that Hillary's fans and the media won't want to hear. But it's so funny and compelling. I don't know if they'll be able to ignore this.
That's a good point, and it needs to be brought up by the Republican campaigns because the media is certainly not going to do it. At the Democratic debate last night, on the same day that the State Department announced it was investigating Hillary Clinton, nary a question about that or the ongoing FBI investigation. Nothing to see here.
Here's the thing. Like, here's an ad making fun of the press for being lapdogs to Hillary being played on Morning Joe, and Mika's laughing at it.
All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And, of course, as we move to South Carolina from New Hampshire, you know, they had a lot of folks like Kasich and Bush kind of going for the independent vote or the moderate vote. There seemed to be a big chunk of voters who were targeted there. In South Carolina, it's very different. It's a much more conservative electorate. You've got a lot of evangelicals. You've got a lot of strongly pro-military folks there, folks who are serving or who have served in the military. And so the argument from the Cruz campaign is that he's the true conservative in this race. He's taking on Donald Trump. He had an ad against Marco Rubio. But then Donald Trump responded with this tweet. Remember, it was the Republican Party with the help of conservatives that made so many promises to their base but didn't keep them. Now, he's partly right. There's a lot of frustration, and rightly so, in the grassroots about the way Republicans and Republican leaders in particular have dealt with Obama over the past several years. But to say that nobody, particularly someone like Cruz and potentially even Rubio, depending upon the issue, have not fought back and stood their ground, it's going to be a tough sell. And to say conservatism in general is the bad thing here, that's not a good message.
This is a bad martini, but maybe some good can come of it, Greg, because maybe this is a clarifying debate we need to have. Yes, there are conservatives in Washington. Greg, I don't know about you. I would look at the Obama years as an era in which conservatives have been pretty much shut out of having any say in what government is actually doing. It's not like conservatives are setting our foreign policy. It's not like conservatives passed the stimulus. It's not like they passed Obamacare. It's not, you know, you can argue that they've had to acquiesce to certain budgets and, you know, after the government shutdown didn't work out. But by and large, conservatives are not getting to enact their ideas. Now, people are deeply frustrated in the state of the country, and they see Republicans having control of Congress, and they say, aha, they're part of the problem. They're all the same. They're all a bunch of crooks. It's time to get, you know, some good, you know, good American like Donald Trump in charge, and he'll straighten things out. And I'd argue that, no, the problem is not that, you know, conservatives have been acquiescing or going along with Democrats to enact liberal solutions. The problem is we have not enacted conservative solutions. And the problem is it's very, very difficult to enact conservative solutions if you don't have the White House. And you know, the idea, you know, you don't have a veto-proof majority. You don't control the federal bureaucracy. You don't control the regulations. Barack Obama has run roughshod all over the Constitution with his executive orders. That's why he's winning. You can go down the list of almost every major accomplishment of the Obama years. And it has all been done outside of the regular order of how a bill becomes a law that we all saw in that Schoolhouse Rock special.
True.
Right? Remember Obamacare with deem and pass, right?
Yes.
We were going to deem that the bill has been passed and the Cornhusker kickback and all that kind of stuff. The Iran deal, right? No, it's not a treaty. We don't need you, Congress. We don't need the Senate to ratify this. The executive order on immigration. You know, this is a president who works around Congress ever since the 2010 midterm elections. So to me, what the answer is conservative policies. To do that, we need to elect a conservative. Donald Trump looks at it and sees conservatives as part of the problem. So one, if you're conservative, this is one of the many reasons I argue you can't support Donald Trump. Donald Trump thinks you're part of the problem if you're conservative. Two, I think this is a exhibit A of how Donald Trump doesn't actually know how Washington works and has not accurately diagnosed the problem. And if you don't diagnose the problem, you cannot have the correct solution.
I would say 2 points in response to this. Number one, I think a lot of that is obviously true. At the same time, though, Republicans promised a lot in 2014 that if they got the majority in both sides of Capitol Hill, they would be able to stop all this stuff, including what the president was doing unilaterally with immigration, or was at least rumored to be doing at that time. He didn't do it till after the election. So they either overpromised or didn't deliver. But one of the things that frustrates obviously a lot of grassroots folks is that aspect of it. The second thing is, Jim, this might be the most frightening thing of all. These Trump supporters, they might not care. You point out the liberal positions he's held in the past until very, very recently on things like health care, which he may still hold, in fact, abortion, immigration, and all these other things that have changed a lot in the last few years. They don't care. He's the guy who's going to go in there and just bust things up and be a leader, a real leader. So if you tell them that he's not a true conservative, are they going to care?
No, I mean, the argument we keep running into, I'm oversimplifying it, but I'm too angry to think about political details. I am too mad to contemplate the actual policies that we want to enact. And at that point, like, you know, I don't use the term Trump or tantrum, but like you're basically openly proclaiming, I don't want to think about this. This is too hard. I don't want to fuss with all these details. Trump's going to fix it. That is exactly the kind of messianic vision of politics that we laughed at on the Democratic side in 2007 and 2008. And now we've adopted it. That's a bad, bad martini, Greg.
Yeah, not good at all. Not good at all. But we'll see how the verdict comes down a week from Saturday. On to the crazy martini now. And, Jim, this is something you wrote about in The Jolt here on Friday. And that's the catch-22 that Hillary Clinton may find herself in here in the Democratic race. You point out that given where the grassroots is way fired up for Bernie Sanders right now, Hillary's got a ton of baggage. Young people want absolutely nothing to do with her. That for Hillary Clinton to win, she's either got grease the system with the superdelegates or she's got to destroy Bernie Sanders to the point where he's considered unelectable by a majority of Democratic primary and caucus voters. Either way, you're going to offend a lot of people who really like Bernie Sanders, or you're going to find yourself up really grinding all the way through the late spring and into the early summer, actually trying to beat an avowed socialist. So either way, for Hillary Clinton, she's got a lot of problems here, and her options aren't good.
Indisputably, the Republicans have problems, as we discussed in that last martini. But it feels like the media doesn't really want to address this and look at this very closely. But look, we've had two contests. As we mentioned in the martini earlier this month, we have a tie and a big Sanders win. And she's got like about 350 more delegates than he does.
Right.
And so I went and did the math today. And it's like, look, it is true that the superdelegates couldn't completely overrule the regular election results. They couldn't hand wave them away and just hand the nomination to Hillary. But they do make it possible for her to win the nomination if she doesn't win the most the regular delegates. And people say, oh, Democrats would never do that. Look, we just saw Madeleine Albright say that if you don't vote for Hillary and you're a woman, you're going to hell. Right? We've just seen Gloria Steinem say that the reason young women are after are supporting Bernie Sanders is because they're chasing the boys and they're boy crazy. Right? I mean, Democratic elites are every bit as capable of sneering at and disregarding and mocking their grassroots supporters as anybody else. So the idea that, oh, they would never do this. Look, if it's, you know, the most extreme format, I think I've run the math, you know, if it splits 58 to 42 in favor of Sanders, if all of the superdelegates backed Hillary, they could flip it to her. It won't happen in that scenario. But if it's 51-49, 52-48, I mean, how much does Sanders have to win by for those superdelegates to say, okay, we're going to switch, we're going to support Sanders? If it's 50-50, the superdelegates could end up fixing it. So Hillary's got a little bit of a cushion as long as she avoids a wholesale abandonment by the superdelegates. And look, I say this and it sounds like a joke, but this is actually true based on profiles written of Hillary Clinton. The Clintons don't have an enemies list. They have an enemies Excel spreadsheet. They really keep track of who betrays them and who helps them and who's there for them and who's not. And they never forget. And we all know these are vindictive people. You don't have to believe those Free Republic mid-1990s Arkansas email list of all the mysterious deaths around the Clintons. Just ask Ken Starr, right? Just ask, you know, Kathleen Willey. Just ask anybody who's crossed the Clintons and see how this shakes out. Because my sister, you know, they are a vindictive and nasty couple when they want to be. Now, maybe this is the end of them, but my suspicion is that as this goes on, she's not going to find beating Bernie Sanders easy. She's at, you know, you could argue she hasn't done it yet, and she's going to have to get nastier and nastier. And, you know, the grassroots supporters of Bernie Sanders are going to see this, and they're going to say, wait a minute, you know, this is, we've been arguing the system is rigged, and here is the Democratic Party behaving as if the system is rigged. Do these people come out and vote for her in November? I think it's a very open question. I think that, you know, these people would have good reason to be really angry at Hillary Clinton. So as much as there's a deep divide on the Republican side, I think this divide on the Democratic side might be every bit as consequential and hard to repair. And you know, ultimately, you may see the Democratic Party kind of get split between the status quo half and the socialist half.
Could very well happen. I think eventually you'd get some of them back because the Democrats will spend 3 or 4 months completely demonizing whoever the Republican nominee is, and you'll get some of them back. But to think that you're going to get the fervor and the full coalition that Obama was able to put together in 08 and 12, at least as circumstances are currently present in this race, don't seem like they're likely to happen. And that's ultimately very good news for Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is, and somebody had argued up in New Hampshire last weekend that the reason you're seeing really intense disputes amongst Republicans is because we don't think we're picking a nominee. We think we're picking a president. Now, look, Bernie Sanders could win the presidency. Hillary Clinton should win the presidency. Democrats kind of have that electoral college structure that's worked very well for them. We shouldn't say, oh, we got this one in the bag. Having said that, if the Democrats do look like they're in so much trouble and kind of the traditional difficulty of keeping the presidency after 8 years of holding the White House, maybe that's one of the reasons for this, that everybody kind of senses that this is the end of a Democratic era. And the question is, what vision of republicanism will replace it?
It's a lot easier to get folks fired up when the other party's been in power. So we'll see what that works out for Republicans. Jim, have a fantastic weekend. You and I will be here on President's Day slugging away because we're still trying to figure out who the next president's going to be. So we can't take the day off.
Look, there's work to be done. You take that day off, federal workers.
Yes, please. And more. I love the
between all the snow days.
I love the commute when they're not there. Have a good weekend. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone. And join us again Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.